Hey there. Thanks for checking out this episode of H&M Live. Your support is always greatly appreciated, as I'm always striving to provide content that enlightens, entertains, and educates. Look, I've just enabled supporter functionality on the podcast, so click the link in the show description, and any support that you provide will be greatly appreciated. Be well.
Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
What's going on, y'all? James Hicks here from Infotainment News and ITN Live. Look, been wanting to do this for a long time. This being starting a podcast to go along with the site and go along with the other social media platforms we have. But been always trying to find the right platform to use, right? Been looking for how to get the message out to our engaged readers, our engaged viewers, how to monetize. And believe it or not, I found the right platform that's getting the job done, that's going to be easy to use and easy to set up. That platform is Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right away. Check it out. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now. This is an ad for Anchor, if you didn't guess that by now. Check it out. If you want to get started with Anchor, if you want to start sending out your message, owning your own platform, broadcasting your message, go to anchor.fm/start. Join me, join the rest of the diverse authors and owners of content out there. Get your podcast off the ground. Let us know where it is. Talk to you soon. Y'all be cool. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, good evening. James Hicks here from Hicks New Media and Infotainment News. Tonight is a very different night for Infotainment News. We're talking about a different topic, which, quite honestly and quite frankly, I know nothing about. But that is the reason why I have two knowledgeable individuals. And tonight we're going to be talking about altcoin, alternative currency, not just your Bitcoin, but other types of currency that's available on the market. And it's a relevant topic. And for that reason, that I've brought two folks on who have some experience with that. So let me shut up and let me bring them on screen, on camera. Ladies and gentlemen, first we have Andrew and we have Eric. Gentlemen, how are you tonight?
Doing well.
Awesome. So as I mentioned in the intro, I don't know what I'm talking about, right? But I wanted to have this conversation because I think it's a relevant conversation. I think that there are folks who are interested in this. Well, I know that there are folks who are interested in this because, look, every day at work, I'm sitting here with CNBC on and the TV and behind me, and alt currency, cryptocurrency is a topic that is brought up frequently. I believe there was actually some high-profile news last week, as well as the currency market or Bitcoin or something specifically reached a high trade value. So let's start kind of at the beginning. Andrew or Eric, give us kind of what your take is as the what is altcoin?
Sure, James. I can start off just real quick here. So basically, I'm Andrew, and 7 years ago, I got into cryptocurrency. Coworker started talking about Bitcoin. I'm like, what is that? I have no idea. I started looking into it, got pretty paranoid, thought, wow, the government's going to come after me even for searching for this stuff. But over time, got a little more comfortable with it. Eventually, you know, sent some money over to the Mt. Gox exchange in 2013 to try it out. That was around the time that the price was about $270. You know, the price started going up a little bit, then it dropped. It went up and down. It was volatile. It got my attention. And then since then, I started mining it for, you know, a couple different iterations of mining it. And honestly, I'm very interested in blockchain and decentralization and some of the philosophies behind it, even more than the currency aspect of it. But it's been quite a ride. And so happy to share, you know, some of my knowledge. And but please don't go trading or doing anything off of my advice. You know, definitely not a financial advisor.
That's your legal disclaimer right there, right? You know, any knowledge or any advice that I give you tonight, don't take that to heart.
Yep. Okay. No agenda here. I'm just here for James to share some information.
So let me ask you this, and then Eric, I'll turn it over to you. So Andrew, I know, and you mentioned about mining. You've had some things going in the past, right? You have some deep experience with mining, and so tell me what that entails, right? You know, when you say you're mining for altcoin, mining for Bitcoin, you know, the physical infrastructure, you know, what does that entail besides just trading from a trading perspective?
Yeah, so by mining, basically it's like it would be like you're the Federal Reserve. You're printing money. So basically, you get the computers, you connect it up to the network. And if your computers are set up right and you solve the problem that the mining algorithm is looking for, then you get the cryptocurrency connected up to your private keys. So basically, it's like you get a piece of the pie. You create a piece of the pie, like a baker.
It sounds like SETI to the nth degree, right? So I've done all of the SETI stuff, right, and trying to help solve medical algorithms, you know, mm-hmm. have my CPU and doing those types of things. So it definitely sounds more involved, more resource intensive. Again, if you're going to set up a mining rig and things like that. So Eric, talk to us a little bit about where you come in when it comes to altcoin. Because let's be honest, and I'll give you the credit. This was your idea to have this show. So let me give you the platform and get you in front of camera.
My disclaimer is also I am not a financial advisor, and I'm really on the trading end of this I don't know what do you want to call it of this adventure. Andrew is probably a lot more in depth, and you know, as he's mining this, you know, as he said, you know, they're, you know, it's the back end is like blockchain, and they're looking for these algorithms that solve for something. All right, so. For me, we got introduced to it. I don't know if you remember way back. I want to say it was about 7 years ago when it actually wasn't even there wasn't. It was like $10. This guy was they were making these Bitcoin ATMs, and we're in Vegas at the It was the one behind.
All right, don't get me in trouble here. On we're recording. And we're on Facebook. But
anyway,
Mom is probably watching.
This guy, no, we were there for a CES. Remember? And then what these guys were trying to do, the business end when they were trying to introduce the Bitcoin. So it's always been in the back of my mind, and I always thought, you know, hey, it sounds interesting. We didn't actually take him up on the $10 because, you know, it wasn't a
right.
Can you imagine if we did though? But anyway, I've always only been on the trading end of it, and it's just been recently that I got in. I started looking at, I got some Bitcoin. You know, probably not full Bitcoins. I'm not paying $9,000 for it, but. I started trading in some other altcoins, some alternative coins. And, you know, I look at that because as the coronavirus is hitting, as all these other things are happening to our country, they're going to be trying to find a better solution at not just printing a whole bunch of, you know, the dollar is probably worth, you know, there's going to be another alternative way to use money. But anyway, I got on it merely on the trading side of it, just because of the excitement. You know, after from working from E-Trade, I started just saying, hey, you know what, this could be something for me. You know, so and then I started studying the whole blockchain thing.
Right. Talk to me a little bit about so again, this is layman's terms coming in, just asking questions. Talk to me, what is the controversy piece, though, right? I mean, there seems to be, I remember the early conversations, again, watching in CNBC and financial news and things of that. There's always seemed to be some type of controversy. And maybe, Andrew, you hit on it a little bit by saying, again, you're quote-unquote printing your own money. Maybe that's the issue.
No, that would definitely, I mean, that's definitely territory that I think used to get people in trouble, and it still could, I'm sure, depending on where you're at. But yeah, I'm basically printing money. It's sovereign money. I didn't ask anyone permission. And it would be pretty darn hard to take it from me. I'm sure it could be done, but it's very different than a bank. It's just the absolute opposite. And I feel like in a lot of ways it's very empowering. And it's a good alternative. It's a good way to hedge against the current system and the paradigms. There's just a lot of politics, in our, obviously in our current situation. And this is a way, at least for me, it gives me hope that there's another way to do this. Maybe there's a way where, people can have more control over their destiny. And, it could be better for better or worse. I mean, there's a lot of responsibilities when you start trying to have your own cryptocurrency, try to keep those keys yourself. I mean, there's a lot of things that go wrong. I've had multiple times where I've been basically ripped off when the Mt. Gox exchange went under. I think, what was that, in early 2014? I lost my Bitcoin in that. I lost some when the BTCE exchange got, taken over by, it got shut down by the feds or something terrible. And there's a lot of times, because this is a permissionless global paradigm, there's nowhere to go to figure out what the source of truth is for the any exchanges you're working with. You don't know whether their quality, whether they've been audited, whether they're just straight up run by the mob, or whether they're like real business people, putting their blood, sweat, and tears into some new financial tool. It's really hard to tell. Sometimes it takes years to learn that something you thought was legit wasn't. And sometimes you find that out because the government takes over the website and stamps it out. And so that's how you know that, oh, I guess that wasn't actually legitimate. And so I've tried my best to steer towards projects that I thought were founded and good values, weren't trying to rip people off. But through my 7 years, I have seen more scams go on in this space than in anything. It's just unbelievable the greed that people have and what ends they will go to suffer. So it's just this crazy mix of, on one hand, you've got this super strong technology that's basically unbreakable, and at least in our current period of time, and it allows for complete transparency and you can trust this algorithm instead of trusting a person who could be corrupt. But at the same time, people try to take advantage of that and get what they can from it. So it's a delicate balance to get through this stuff and not lose your money. You have to have a lot of patience.
Right. So go ahead, Eric. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, think of what is the dollar? What is the dollar? What does the dollar do? The dollar allows us to be able to record a transaction. So it's like, hey, I want to buy a, say you're selling a ball. I want to buy that ball. And say, here's a dollar for that ball. You give me that ball. That's that transaction that's recorded. And Andrew hit it on the head. You definitely want to do your research, because what I tend to look for are coins or programs that actually solve for a solution. Let's take, for instance, so what he's talking about, the differences is that you have dollars, which is regulated by the Federal Reserve. You have what this is deregulated. And what I mean by regulated is that when I try to take money from here and to move it over here, you have this third party process that says, hey, you know what, he wants to move some money. I don't know if you've ever seen it, like you have an electronic transfer of funds, but if I go from one bank to another bank, sometimes it costs money to move it over. Sometimes it just takes, for electronic, you think, oh, wow, this, why does it take 3 days if I'm moving this money electronically? So you have a centralized organization. So what cryptocurrency does is give you a decentralized take, for instance, I want to move money from the United States and give it to some family in overseas. If I use SWIFT or any of these other like wire money, it just tends to be expensive. I'm going to send $20 over to my friend. By the time it gets to them, they probably got $16 after all the fees go through. And what some
crypto PayPal fees, yeah. I know about like, okay.
And so what this does, it actually makes it so that you can move a large amount of money faster. And I'll talk about some of the cryptocurrencies that I tend to look at or lean towards that allow you to move large amounts of money or an amount of money at a fraction of the cost and faster.
Okay.
Those are some things you can look at. Some of the ones I look at, maybe XRP or XA or Stellar, or any ones that I'm going to talk about, usually solve for a problem like that, like solve for inexpensive way to transfer money, ways to have a contract that allows, these are things that you want to do your research in when you're right. Looking at cryptocurrencies. But Andrew's right. There's literally thousands out there that if you don't do your research, you can get ripped off on.
Right. So let me ask those symbols that you meant, those tickers, right? I'm just going to use my old Dow Jones stuff here. Are those companies or are those currencies themselves that you're talking about, right? I'm trying to just wrap my head around the dynamic of, you guys have mentioned a couple of different exchanges, a couple of different XRTs. You know, what are those? Are those companies or are those? Explain that.
Andrew can probably talk more about that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Eric.
No, again, from the standpoint I am, you know, when I look at like something like XRP, it's usually, and again, Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong, XRP is the actual currency, which XRP is they call it Ripple. Ripple has ties to the bank, so it's the bank's network, and they've created this. But I think what it is the software that pushes that is behind that or in front of that, if you will, is XRAP or something like that. So I'm not really sure how the mining portion of it goes.
So the XRP is actually the exchange itself.
The cryptocurrency, correct.
Okay, so it is essentially one of those altcoins, similar to Bitcoin. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's a similar to not it's an alternative coin, correct. But as far as the back end, I know XRAP is the tool or programming that, if you will, that they're using to transfer the funds or transfer the money. What the XRP, what the Ripple is itself, I want to say is the currency, the transaction.
Okay.
I don't know. You probably know more than I will, Andrew, about what that is front end.
Yeah. So I've following the stuff for a long time, you know, so in the beginning there was Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the first cryptocurrency. I think it's a UTXO. So user generated transactions, on a network, and it's, you know, mathematics, cryptography. And, it kind of started out as an experiment, and then the chain, as people started using it more, it just picked up steam. They had a couple, you know, they added updates to it, but from the beginning, it starts off, with the Genesis block. That's the very, you know, the first block. And I think, you know, they put some newspaper article in there, and you know, anyone who gets a copy of the Bitcoin blockchain, if they look at the first block, they'll see the same transaction note coded in there, you know, about like something from a newspaper. And then later, someone made a change to they took the Bitcoin open source code, they changed a couple things, put it back out there. People started using it. They called it Litecoin. You know, and then later a whole different type of network. It wasn't a UTXO type network. It wasn't built off of the Bitcoin code base. Ethereum started getting popular, and that's what they call it, like, you know, like a
alternative,
like virtual machine, I guess. Oh, yeah, it's yeah. You know, different. So it's got a whole different style of how the network communicates. A lot more features, but these things still worked on the backs of mining. And mining basically is the way that the network finds the consensus for what is actually in the database. That's the blockchain, because the you know, in the blockchain, everyone has a copy of it. They all have the same copy of the information, and the network and the miners together work out you know, who's got the, whose idea of what is in that chain is the prevailing one, and we'll go forward. And it does this like a clock, just over and over and over again. And every tick that happens in the past, it could be mathematically validated to ensure that all along the way, there's not a single link in the chain that has ever been manipulated or changed for, you know, by for any means. It's just not possible with our current technology to alter the Bitcoin blockchain and maintain its everyone's consensus that it was that it is the way it is. And it could get pretty complicated. But not all cryptocurrencies are mineable. There's a bunch of cryptocurrencies that aren't mineable at all. And in fact, what they really are databases that are centralized and controlled by usually a very small number of people. And they can make a lot of money off of this stuff, and they're able to market it heavily. And exchanges get paid money to list cryptocurrencies. So sometimes cryptocurrencies that I would basically say are a complete scam end up becoming massively huge. Once they snowball enough that enough people are making money with it, it's so many people are paid off that no one wants to call it out. And a lot of people get confused on what's a legitimate cryptocurrency and what's not. But just because it's a scam doesn't mean it doesn't work and doesn't make people money. And a lot of people, they want to transact money. They want to move it around, you know, get some, send some. And it doesn't matter whether it's a mineable cryptocurrency or any other type of cryptocurrency. But the problem with the cryptocurrencies that aren't mineable and haven't been released ethically are that a lot of times there will be holders that have a whole bunch of the coins that they basically made for themselves, and they can control the price of the coin. Mm. With that, they can also dump it at any point and wreck all of the people that are involved. And this stuff happens. I've seen it happen so many times. You know, and there's a lot of FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt out there. I don't know the absolute truth of any of the claims that the different currency factions, you know what they say, but I've looked into the code on a couple of the UTXOs. Looks fine to me. It's pretty complicated. There's a lot of stuff in there. It could be, you know, Bitcoin could be a scam, but I don't think it is. There's a bill, you know, there's a lot of billions of dollars there for the taking for anyone who can crack it.
So that brings up an interesting point, and I think you touched on it a little bit. Can you transact with Bitcoin? Eric, I think you actually mentioned the media, about a week ago, right? You were actually literally able to go somewhere.
AT&T.
There you go, right?
I paid my AT&T. Well, I mean, they called it BitPay, but I actually paid my bill with BitPay. If you go into AT&T, it gives you some options how you want to pay, credit card, your bank, and BitPay.
So that's pretty cool. Right. Mm-hmm. I think
Overstock as well. Overstock has a I don't know if it was called BitPay. I'll log back into my account, but I didn't use it in Overstock, but I did use it in my AT&T.
I don't want to tell my wife about that. She'll probably be buying stuff off of Overstock.
So in my time, what I appear to have seen from my perspective is that a lot of the exchanges and a lot of the currencies that have founders who maintain control of it and can basically pay people off and pay to get exposed on the exchanges. They get a lot of exposure, a lot of traffic. They also seem to have made it very difficult to upgrade the Bitcoin blockchain, the original one. They've kept it really slow, really expensive. So it's a really terrible, way to try to actually move things around efficiently. You know, you can pay for a cup of coffee with it, and the transaction fee will probably cost you 10 times more than the coffee, and you won't get it until it's cold. This is true. It's just really slow. The technology is super outdated. It's really inefficient in so many ways, but it's big, and it's got the first mover advantage. It seems to be in a fantastic store of value if you've got pretty, you know, 4 years at a time of a time frame before you want to cash it out. But, There are other blockchains that still work off the same concept of Bitcoin that are extremely secure. They're super fast. There's, as far as I can tell, there's no one that been able to take a bunch of the coins for themselves without following the rules of the algorithm, which is all I really want. It's just a fair, I'm so upset with the way our currency is worked out for the United States and what's the ramifications of that, particularly for the debt that my daughter is going to need to pay in her lifetime for this. I think it's not fair. And so I look towards the blockchain and I look for fairness, and in that fairness, to find the fairness, I look at the algorithm and I think, is this fair, you know, and is this been changed out in a way that is, you know, that's exploiting people? Is it legit? And so that's what I've been trying to follow, is those algorithms. Yeah. And so there are a bunch of intermediaries that get in between the transactions and get a cut for themselves. So like Bitcoin's slow, but there's the Lightning Network that can help make it faster. But you have to trust the Lightning Network, and they're going to take a cut of the transactions. All these exchanges take a large cut of the transaction. Everyone, BitPay, everyone wants their cut. There's even like the equivalent of the Federal Reserve just printing maybe fake money and putting it into the Bitcoin network in order to enrich themselves as well. Like this USDT Tether, there's a whole bunch of controversy. So it's crazy land out there. But there are actual cryptocurrencies that work in a decentralized, totally authentic fashion that are super fast, and they're here now, and you could just use them, but you won't find any of the news sites talking about them. That you won't find them listed on some of the most popular exchanges, and there is definitely a controversy. But it's about who is on the take and who is actually legit, and I think it's almost like a war going on.
Yeah.
Well, it's I don't liken it to the Wild West or anything, but I think one of you even said the fact that it's unregulated, it's folks, kind of like you mentioned, Andrew, who are fed up, right, with the way that the Federal Reserve, politicians, just the way that things are being regulated today, finding an alternative means of still having currency, of being able to transact. That's... You're on the leading cusp of that. I think. I mean, again, you said you started 7-8 years ago, almost a decade ago. So you've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, and now it's starting to again become more and more. I don't want to call it mainstream because I don't think it'll ever be mainstream, but it'll be more and more recognized. And I think so. Eric, you kind of got in not too long ago, right? You haven't necessarily been in over a few years, but what drew you to looking at alternative coins? What drew you into it? Was it the ability to...
The economy. How we're printing money like it's nothing. I mean, there has to be some alternative. Like you said, I mean, is this what's going to happen to our children? You know, we've already printed so much money, and what do we have to back it up? You know, all these dollars, and then with COVID, and then printing another $1 trillion of, putting it out there, there has to be a better... So I've really just been kind of, you know, dabbling in it and trying to see, you know, like you said, I don't know. I think what an opportunity is, though, is for someone to create a layman's term so that we can understand, hey, what the algorithm should look like and what, you know, if is this fair? Because, I, you know, like I said, I'm going by just researching. You know, I'll look at stuff even though it's the decentralized, the two that I look, well, other than Ethereum, because Ethereum, you know, I've been trading in Ethereum and in Ethereum Classic. But other than that, it's been XRP, Ripple, and also Stellar. In my mind, XRP is still kind of tethered to the banks network. I guess a group of banks that network together to be able to transact. So I've been looking at that. But, you know, like everyone can look at different options, you know, on their own. But again, for me, it's a shoot in the dark, a shot in the dark. Because I don't know what's going to be a scam. I don't know what the algorithm should look like. But I bet that would be a great opportunity if somebody could come up with an interface that says, oh, yeah, this looks good. I mean, does that make sense? If we could be able to track something like that, like, you know, like I can look at a register of my checking account and say, OK, yeah, that I spent that. I said, you know, these are my transactions. But how do I know if these coins are going, you know, through the right channels or, you know, getting. So, like I said, I've been kind of taking a chance and, you know, and I'm not looking at. I'm not going to go and spend $9,000 on Bitcoin.
Yeah, I was going to say, so talk to us from your perspective, because again, you said you're coming in from a trader's perspective, and Andrew's, I think, is coming more from the mining perspective. I mean, the whole infrastructure piece. So I guess you guys talk to each other. Eric, talk to us about what's on your watch list or your pick list right now. And you know, let's have, I'm gonna let you guys have that dialogue while I just sit back and listen and learn.
Well, two of mine are on the top 12 list, and they got a ranking here. And the sites that I look at is CoinMarketCap.com and MarketCap. MarketCap gives you more of a, hey, it's trading. And what I mean by trading is trading every day. That you see the ticker going click, click, click. It's just moving all the time. And and they're really in like cents, half cents, less than a penny. And the couple that I'm looking at are around, you know, six, seven, like, let me see, Stellar, I think, was trading at like seven. Let's go in there right now. I bought it at four. It's like 7 cents, you know. So I got a couple thousand dollars in it. So I'm not really heavily vested in it. You know, I'm just trying to see what I can do. But when I saw it growing, I was like, oh crap, this is looking kind of cool, you know. So I went and bought like 10,000 coins, 10,000 of Stellar, and I was like, oh, okay, damn. Then it went tanked. I was like, oh crap. So it's really volatile. It moves like crazy. So But again, I'm trading on like literally, I mean, less than 25, no, but less than 20 cents. Ripple has been trading at 20 cents. The latest one I looked at is zero X. And man, I bought that with like 20 cents. Then when it shot all the way to 45. So it's exciting coming from E-Trade. I'm thinking, okay, I've never seen volatility like that. You know, so quick like that. And then just like that, it dropped back down to 20 cents. So it's probably a day trader's like dream. Oh, put in a couple, you know, $1 million and take it out. But, you know, that's what I look for. You know, those are the ones like I'm Ethereum Classic. I'm looking at Zero X, Stellar, XRP. In my mind, XRP and Stellar are kind of the same. They solve pretty much kind of the same solution, except for XRP is tethered to a banking network. So there's some sort of regulation, I guess, in my mind. Whereas Stellar is like the total different, is decentralized, deregulated, and but I think they're solving for some good solutions. I mean, that's me. Again, I'm not I don't understand it as much as Andrew does in the back end, but that's what I look at, you know.
Well, you told me to install an app. What was that?
Coinbase.
Coinbase. Now, if I logged into Coinbase and put in some of those symbols, walk me through a transaction, right? How do I take money from Wells Fargo, buy something through Coinbase? Walk me through.
You connect your car to it. I
mean, see, now so, I'm getting nervous now. Just talk me off the edge.
There was a couple that I chose. Robinhood, actually. I started out on Robinhood first. Okay. I started investing in regular trades, and then I said, hey, they actually got Bitcoin in there, but it didn't have all the ones that I like. You know, that I want to invest in. Like, still. So what Coinbase has has all of them. So I just said, hey, you know what? Let me move them all to this wallet. Now I can see them all here, and I can keep all my regular trading in my Robinhood, you know, for my paper stocks. Yeah. So I got in Coinbase, which allows you to create an account. You know, you have your wallets for each currency that you purchase, and then I basically connect my card, my Wells Fargo, if you will, to the Coinbase, move some cash over it. The exciting thing is I've also kind of sold some coin, and then actually can bring it back to my bank account. So you still have that movement there in Coinbase. I'm not sure about any other wallet. I think there's some wallets that really don't give you a lot of that flexibility in my mind. Like one of the ones with the browser, Brave has a coin that backs it up called Bat. I liked it at first because it was part of the whole Google. Brave is a browser that looks like it looks like it's Google backend, I want to say, because every time, you know, I look at the backend, it's like, it says Chrome. So,
okay, so it's Chromium in the back. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's an Ethereum is the backend. Bat is part of an Ethereum code. Andrew, you can back me up on that. I don't know. When I look at Bat, that's when I started looking at it, because it was part of the whole Ethereum family, Ethereum. And then I said, let me try this. And it didn't move as well as I thought it would. But then when I got out of it, I actually converted my BAT into Bitcoin just so I can have, you know, a little more leverage in Bitcoin. So I do hold some Bitcoin, just not a lot. It's I'm not sure how it is, but like if you think of Satoshis as like pennies to the dollar, I think Satoshis are like the pennies to the Bitcoin, or half, you know, parses. Is that correct?
See, Andrew? Yeah, you're dropping a whole lot of slang here, or a whole lot of insider financial lingo. Again, you know, I could talk to you about storage deduplication ratios and, you know, SSD and NVMe and those types of things. But now, Andrew, in layman's terms, please.
You got all the IOPS, man.
Yeah, I can talk to you about that, right?
Yep. So I guess from the a little trading history around cryptocurrencies, you know, it started off where you just have Bitcoin. Some of the first transactions were between users. The network, basically these networks run on the backs of running a wallet. It's kind of weird, but the wallet is actually the server that you would have on your computer. And if you're going to run they call it a full node wallet, you have this application called a wallet running on your computer. You open a port in your firewall, and it sends out a network broadcast to whatever, you know, whatever other nodes are in a seed list. And it's kind of like a BitTorrent kind of. It gets around to letting everyone else know where everyone else is at. And they all start sharing the ledger and validating that the ledger is indeed mathematically makes, you know, sense. The cryptography puzzles fit together. And then that's the wallet. So when you have a wallet, you're not actually having, it's not like you've taken the coins from the blockchain and brought them to you. It's just like a portal to the blockchain. And the blockchain, it doesn't actually even exist necessarily on the internet. It's just the contents of what's in the ledger. That's the blockchain. It's just the contents of the ledger. So you can turn off the internet, turn everything off. Your coins don't go away. You can lose your computer. They're not gone. It's just, you have to know what the key is to unlock them in the ledger when the network comes back up.
So that's what I've heard before. Folks have apparently lost that key, right? And they've lost all of their transactions, all their savings,
And the keys can get lost a lot of different ways. It could be, there's so many pitfalls. But before people were on the, you know, the Bitcoin network sending Bitcoin around, buying pizzas, whatever the folklore is. But then at some point there was this Magic the Gathering card trading website that some guy bought from some other guy. And he decided, hey, why instead of just trading these Magic the Gathering cards, why don't we put some of these put a cryptocurrency on there? And people started trading it. Suddenly that site started trading billions of dollars of cryptocurrency. It just took off. They were not expecting it. The security on the site wasn't super hot. Hackers found it. They stole it. They got my coins too. It was sad because I didn't own, you know, I had a wallet on that website, but it wasn't really my wallet. I didn't really have the keys.
Right.
It was that exchange had the wallet. And so, you know, with Coinbase, you know, Coinbase has the keys. If you use Binance has the keys. You use Bittrex has the keys. So you don't actually have that cryptocurrency. They have it, but you have a username and password that can get you access to it if they let you. Right. And there's been plenty of situations where an exchange that has people's cryptocurrencies suddenly decides that they don't want people to have access to it. Occasionally it will be because someone like the state of New York comes along and says, hey, we don't want you transacting with our people because you don't follow our rules. And so that exchange will say, okay, everyone that's coming from New York, you just can't get in anymore. You're SOL.
And that happened. That's happened.
Oh yeah,
New York was the first place they started trading. So I don't know if you've watched that the movie how the Bitcoin all started out. Like you said, they you know, it was a couple of okay. So there was like this mystery guy. Satoshi? Yeah, Satoshi Nakamura. He was like this. You know, no one's there. No one even actually knows who this guy is, but he drops off code. And then there was a couple of groups of people that called cyberpunks. All these little groups, I think it was like four or five groups that actually started working with the code. You could watch the movie. I mean, that's the sense I got. But what happened was there was this guy that started, he opened up the first exchange. And this is where he started in New York, where they were going through this whole court trial about if this is, you know, something that was legal, or I don't know what the terms were, but so they could no longer do it in New York. So they took it away out of New York and started elsewhere.
Yep. Okay. I did my little Google Wikipedia search right there. Satoshi Nakamoto is the name used by the presumed pseudonym person or persons who developed Bitcoin, authored the Bitcoin white paper, and created and deployed Bitcoin's original reference implementation.
Okay. Yeah, there's like pretty much any keyword you say related to cryptocurrency, there is a long controversial story around it. It's just conspiracy theory wonderland. It's amazing, really.
And that's what draws you. That's what draws you both to it, right? Just the fact that you're walking on that edge, and that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's nearly dissuaded me a few times trying to navigate between, you know, I don't want to get caught up and have regulators come after me because I've mined the wrong coin at the wrong time, or I didn't do something. And, you know, sometimes the laws change after you've done something. And then you try to look back and you think, well, am I going to have to get a lawyer to try to argue whether I could have even had a chance or not? So when things aren't regulated, you know, that's good because you can do things that you couldn't maybe do otherwise, but it's bad because, you know, the laws can change and you could be on the wrong side of that. Yeah. But at this point, though, things have gone, I think, wonderfully well. I think that cryptocurrencies have come into the mainstream like I never would have thought. They were so obscure before, so hard to work with. But I did think if they came around, I thought that they would be more on the merits of the technology and less about people right. propagating, you know, like their own self-interest. So I wouldn't say it's all gone well. I think it's actually gone kind of bad. Yeah. It's actually quite alarming too, because if we lose the fundamentals of the technology, the security it provides and the authenticity of it, and we just allow the scam aspect to take over, then what we're going to have is global currencies that track all of us, everything we do. We have no privacy. It'll totally suck. So we actually, we have to try to make this the thing we need it to be, but it's really hard to do because it's easy to sell out. It's so easy to sell out. I've seen my holdings, you know, go up thousands of percent up and down over and over again. And every time it's like, it's gut wrenching. You get so excited. You know, you're like, this is life changing. But, you know, I'm trying to stay in it for the long haul. I've got my own strategy. And so things, you know, one day you could think, oh, I'm almost there. This is life changing. This is, you know, this is debt free. And then soon after you're like, wow, it just lost 95%. I can't believe it, you know, and it's got to go up 10,000%, you know, to make it back. It's painful, very painful, but it does go up and down and it follows patterns. The patterns seem to repeat. No guarantee they keep happening, but the patterns, many times they repeat up and down, and then a while later comes up, shoots up again, back down. But every time the floor is a whole nother level higher and higher and higher. And it's astounding the amount that it goes up. But I would say, so if you go to CoinMarketCap and you're looking at coins, the coins that I would be looking at, there's a little drop down on the CoinMarketCap website that says, is this a mineable coin? And if you click there, it used to be all of those coins were mineable. More recently, I think the company Binance, the exchange Binance, bought CoinMarketCap and started to put their own currencies that they actually don't mine and control the market cap of, what I would call a total scam. They put those into the mineable list. They now own CoinMarketCap. It's getting harder for the data aggregators for a regular person to have access to information that is actually not been manipulated, you know, that is not up to catch you. So in the other thing is, I don't want to dissuade people from going out and experimenting with the stuff and having fun with it. And if someone, you know, and there's a lot of money to be made in currencies that you may not understand how they're really working. And if it's going up, I mean, it's going up, and that's got to be enough for most people to have some fun with. But if you get really serious about it, I would look at the mineable cryptocurrencies, look at things like Bitcoin, but not necessarily Bitcoin. So my list, you know, is going to be, it would be to have Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Digibyte is the other one that I've spent most
heard about Digibyte.
My time since 2017 contributing to mining, you know, trying to contribute.
Yeah, because I'm thinking that you go in a different route than like Eric would, right? Through via a Coinbase or something. You acquire your currencies differently, and I don't know if that's something you're comfortable talking about. Or again, I'm just wondering again.
Yeah,
we got two different disparities here. We got a trader, and we got kind of an infrastructure person that I'm calling you. So,
you know, and I started off by buying it through an exchange. Through a convoluted process to get the money into the exchange, which was located in Japan. It was taking a big chance, you know. It's a lot easier nowadays. But so the mining route, you know, it's kind of gone into more of like an industrial level. Like, I'm not even mining right now. I've got mining machines that I've got turned off. They're profitable, but I just don't want to deal with it right now. It's just not that profitable. So I'm just holding off, you know, hold my bags, hold them tight. If someone was going to go try to get into cryptocurrency now, my recommendation would be that they sign up for the Bittrex app. Bittrex is an exchange. It's based out of Seattle. It's still, you know, centralized.
Right.
So, you know, it's got all those things that aren't going for it, but I would suggest, you know, getting the Bittrex account. You're going to have to get verified. All the exchanges that are in the United States, they follow the anti-money laundering, know your customer right. laws. So what that looks like is that you're going to take a selfie of yourself holding up your ID, your driving license, mm-hmm. and send that
okay.
to them.
Okay.
You know, you're going to give them your bank account information. It's very invasive. And when you're dealing with cryptocurrencies, you know, which is already kind of edgy, mixing up your bank account, your driver's license,
your social security card, and you know, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like it'll make you sweat. I mean,
yeah,
wow, you know, and then when you start trading, you've got to remember that I don't know if anyone can understand the tax laws exactly. I don't,
right.
I try my best, but no. It's if you're working with a lot of money, be prepared to, you know, find some kind of tax professional or, you know, get really good at reading laws and be ready because, you know, every transaction, if there's, you're going to have to track the profit and loss. If you're trading a lot, it could be a lot to track. And I don't think they're double dipping, you know, every time if you end up with profit then you got it, but you can screw yourself pretty hard, I think. So just, I wouldn't recommend doing lots of transactions. I would be very laser-like focused. Like, get into the exchange, get validated, buy a currency, set up a wallet on your phone. Like with Digibyte, you know, you can install the Digibyte wallet on your phone. You can install the Core wallet on your Windows box or your Mac or whatever. You know, you go to the cryptocurrency's main website. If you can even figure out what that is, look on Wikipedia. It might be right. It might not be, you know, but start with small transactions, buy a little bit, you know, set up your wallet and then you withdraw from the exchange to your personal wallet.
Right.
In the wallet, before you withdraw to your wallet, there's a button to make it encrypted and you'll type in a seed word, like, a password that unlocks your local wallet. That's not your private key. That's just the password that unlocks the private key. And then you can, in the wallet, it'll tell you your phonemic words or whatever. You'll get like 12 words.
Yeah.
And 12 then words. Later, if you need to restore your wallet, you just need those words. So you take those words, and your passphrase, you put them in a safety deposit box, or you bury them somewhere in the forest with GPS coordinates and you burn that phone, right? Or whatever you do.
whatever you got to do, right?
Computer, yeah. You know, yeah. You don't need a USB stick. All you need to do is write words down, right? And you can't forget the little seed phrase, the passphrase to open up the wallet that. Then later, if you pick the right kind of currency, its API, it won't change. It will still work. You know, Bitcoin from the beginning, it's the same stuff to unlock your crypto, the private key, the private key structure, the database structure, whatever. It doesn't change. If you pick the wrong stuff, you won't be able to restore it. It'll change. You'll just be gone. So you got to pick the right stuff. And the mineable coins are, and older mineable coins, you know, Bitcoin is the real deal. Even if it has been kind of hamstrung and made slow and everyone fights, Digibyte seems to be the real deal. I don't think there's anyone who has too much of it, and it's just pretty well distributed. You want it to be peppered around so that no one has too much, except for yourself, if you can make that happen.
It's good to be selfish, right? I mean, I think what I'm hearing from both of you guys is that there's, as with everything, right, that's I'm gonna say anything that's worth it, there's risk, right? And be cognizant of what you're doing, what you're getting into. But the long and short of it is, Andrew, you've been around the block a few times, and you've got a couple of bumps and bruises, but you've wiped yourself off, and you got more pros than cons, right? About the whole engagement and interaction. Eric, you're getting into it now, and you're seeing some positive gains, and coming at it kind of a different route, and you're seeing some positive gains. So, I like what you just said, Andrew, you know, in terms of how to set up all of that and understanding the whole USB key. You don't need that anymore because folks have gone through those issues before. Lock your passwords and your passcodes up in a vault somewhere. From a closing stance now, I guess. So, Eric, let me start with you. Where do you see yourself going next? Right. So what are you going to do when the markets and are the markets Monday through Friday? I mean, is this something that's
every day? Week? Every day.
So that's different, too, right? Because I can't buy my new put this order in for this new Peloton stock that I'm going to buy Monday morning until Monday morning. So.
Right.
But OK, so it's every day. And what's the next move that you're doing in terms of building your wallet, your base?
Like you said, you know, I have a goal. Like I said, I don't want to do a whole bunch of transactions. So like I said, I have a number of, if I look at what I want to get, then I get that one number. And then for me, it's going to be long term. And again, I look at this as an opportunity because even though it's not like you said, mainstream or something that we're doing right now, it's education. So, you know, now when people are looking to say, hey, how do we do this when it becomes mainstream, if it becomes mainstream, you know, Andrew's, he's got one avenue where he's got his bumps and bruises. I have one way of how I'm following my trends and I have bumps and bruises, but then I'll be educated. It's really educating myself. Again, mine's for long term. So I bought like 10,000 of this. I bought like 10,000 or 2,000 of this, and it's going to be the long haul. So I'm going to wait. It trades. It goes up and down. If I don't like it, I'll just get out of it, which I shouldn't have got out of that. But anyway, you know, it's a learning curve for me. And it's going to, but you know, it's like at work, I'm trying to make it so that they don't ever have to come to me. My job as a consultant working at the airport is trying to make my software so that when I leave there, they just pick it up. But you know, for whatever reason, it's become like almost like a career now, because now they're keeping me here. But it's a good thing. But again, while I'm doing this trading and later I'm educating myself where people are not even, I don't think a lot of people are still educated on cryptocurrency and what this does. They're going to be looking for someone to be able to advise or to be able to educate them on this. So I look at it as an opportunity in the future. Again, it's all long term for me.
There you go. There you go. Andrew, and what about you? You said you've unplugged the rigs, but what's next for you on this journey?
Well, I think it's already been a long-term journey. I feel like I'm getting close to the time,
a decade,
the time where I'm ready to meet some of my financial goals. I'm not there yet, but I think this next market cycle could be the one. There's like a perfect storm of things going on in the world right now that could make cryptocurrency become very valuable. And so, but basically I would say to someone else, just plan on the long term, and also listen to the old timers when they say, not your keys, not your crypto. Like, you know, don't trust the exchanges, don't trust anybody. Like the least amount possible. You want to trust people the least amount possible. In control. I normally don't go up on the internet and talk about this stuff. This is very rare.
Yes. So yeah, this is an exclusive, right? I will, you know, I'm being very cautious in terms of how I refer to you, but yeah, this is definitely not taken lightly. So,
And the other thing is that I would never plan on hiding. Like, you know, I used to be interested in, you know, I mined Darkcoin for a while, and there's stuff like Monero, there's privacy coins. There's ways to try to hide your transactions. I've kind of given up on that concept. I almost feel like at this point, anything that can hide the transactions, ultimately the same like badness that we're trying to get away from, is going to take, is going to own us in that place as well. So my big goal here is I'm like, you know what? It's just going to have to just come out with it. And we're going to have a currency that you can see the transactions. You can see the history of it. People are going to have to, speak for their actions. This is putting the truth out here. And I feel like I want to pay my taxes in cryptocurrency. I absolutely want to see where my money goes to the government and what they do with it. Who do they pay? Where does it go? Right. I'm mining so hard to find out how I can see what they're doing. And so that's how in my mind, it's a flip around. And I can see them trying to keep it from happening, but I want the truth out there. And I think that the way that the stuff is traceable is the truth. And I'm coming for them that direction. I'm coming for them with honesty. So here we are,
man.
I was gonna leave
it alone at that, but you know, go ahead, Eric.
but really quick, I know you probably said you turn off your rigs and stuff like, but is that a result of the because you wanted to, or did the halving that, you know, this halving happened on May 12th. Is that a factor in turning off the rigs, or an ability to and actually maybe explain that whole halving thing, that the halving and what that did for miners?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Bitcoin blockchain cycle, every several thousand blocks, I forget, is 2066 blocks, you know, in the clock or the chain, the algorithm in the chain will make the mining rewards drop in half at a specific cycle about every 4 years. And so when that happens, the economics of everything change, and you know, the price moves with that. And so that's how the Bitcoin blockchain works, and other cryptocurrencies like Digibyte, they do it a little bit differently, and it's more of a smoother, it doesn't just drop to half every 4 years.
Okay.
And so, and so for Bitcoin, you know, it's a huge deal whenever the things have, but it's like inflation halving instantly, and it has a profound effect. But it's also kind of hard on the market, I would say, to try to adjust to these massive jumps. So in the background here, I've got some of my mining rigs that I've worked with over the years and built up, just some random photos of stuff. But basically, when I started mining, I thought, well, you know, I didn't want to cash out into US dollars because I felt like that could have tax consequences, even though the rules hadn't been made up yet. So I would get cryptocurrency and then go online and try to buy stuff with crypto. You could go to Newegg. You can go, you know, sometimes on Craigslist, I'm going to be selling some GPUs or whatever. So some of the hardware I needed, I would just go buy with cryptocurrency again. And my mining rigs evolved. They got bigger and more powerful. It was kind of amazing. It's just kind of like in any business where you take your revenue and you invest in capital, get your production up. And so I was doing that, you know, as a hobbyist miner, definitely not industrial level, just totally in my garage, small, you know, old machines to start with, and started building them up. And I started, making them more elaborate and trying things that I thought was exciting technologically wise, things I couldn't do in my day job. You know, in the networks there. So I started getting to experiment with things that I couldn't otherwise. And one byproduct that was kind of fun of this stuff, I started getting these really powerful GPUs. I wasn't really into gaming at the time, but I thought, well, hey, it would be kind of cool to put some of these things in a gaming rig. So I did. And I had gotten pretty good at modifying voltages and tuning software to get these machines mining to their peak efficiency, you know, and then gaming, it was a different tuning, but I can still get a lot of power out of them. And I started benchmarking to see how powerful they were. And I started getting like, I got like, I was in the top three for the Catzilla benchmark. I've got a couple, you know, Hall of Fames for a 3D mark, you know, in the top 100, and multiple different tests there. So it's been kind of fun that I've been able to take the mining rigs and then turn them into like just basically super competitive gaming rigs. They're amazing. Yeah. Fast. And then recently with, COVID-19, you know, I turned off my mining rigs and to point them at folding at home. So we are, you know, doing work units to try to help with whatever stuff they're doing.
That's what I was doing. Yeah, so I mentioned SETI, but yeah, I was doing the folding at home too for a while. Yeah,
exactly. Well, and I know they were in some of my research they were talking about. I guess going away from the GPU and going more towards the ASIC, what does that do? What does that do? I don't know, economically for miners or.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things going on there, but you know, I started mining. The first thing I mined was called PrimeCoin, and it is using CPU cores. I'm solving for, solving these, prime number, like chains of prime numbers, which is weird mathematical stuff. It used to be, they're just these hashing algorithms for mining are just, they're created to be hard to do. And that's part of how the security of the blockchain works. So that stuff worked well, CPUs. Then there was more profitability if I was mining, mining Ethereum and Darkcoin with GPUs. You know, GPUs, are a little more simple than a CPU, but there's more cores and you can do more work. So that works out, but they use a lot of energy. You know, I was using a couple hundred watts per GPU. And if you've got eight of those in a system, it's a lot of power. You get limited, in your garage by how much power you're comfortable running and paying for. And it gets pretty expensive. It gets hot. So it's and loud. So it's kind of insane when you actually, you know, get a full mining rig running. It's crazy making, but it's amazing just to see the thing there, working away and hearing like ching, ching, ching. And you know, you're not, and it's just like, wow, this is great. I mean, weird and great all at the same time.
Every millisecond, you're making a couple extra nickels. I love it.
Yes. Yeah. And then there's also, ASICs, and ASICs are, they take, you know, the instruction set and basically program them. They put that into hardware that's been created that could only do that specific math problem. They're really useless for anything else. So ASICs are kind of like a big waste of, you know, like silicone, which and power. But because they're just for mining, they're not dual purpose.
Right.
So with GPUs, I was buying a lot of kids use GPUs that they didn't think were hot anymore. But the inside, you know, they were still pretty relevant for me to mine with. And, you know, I got to get some extra use out of it and then still be able to sell them. And, you know, they usually still work. It's
right.
And so there's also FPGA. So I moved up from CPU to GPU. And then I skipped the ASICs. I don't like the idea of like a throwaway miner. I feel like that goes against mm-hmm. something inside of me. I'm like, nope. Mm-hmm. But the FPGA. It's like an ASIC, but it's fully programmable. And these are the kind of chips and systems that you find inside, like, I don't know, your Tesla or whatever, you know, that's running some, you know, it's running different parts of a system. And so you can, and these things will solve problems with very little energy. And Digibyte has like five mining algorithms that are part of it. And so one of those is a new one, and you can mine with FPGAs against it. But what this means is that my mining rig only uses 64 watts instead of 1500 watts. And the parts, when I'm done with it, can be sold again for people to do whatever they want. You know, they're like these Intel Nano DE10s. But one of the issues is that when you do, like, the mining is constantly changing from out underneath you as industrial miners come into the game when the profitability is there. You know, people like me, like, there's no room for us anymore. We get squeezed out. But good decentralized communities, you know, the miners don't, the industrial miners don't speak on behalf of the constituents. They might have a lot of mining power, but we can still, while we still have an edge, while, you know, before they take over, we can say, hey, we're going to change the game so that they can't beat us. And so we change it out and we keep changing it so that we try to stay. It's always going to be a moving target to stay one step ahead of greedy people that are going to try to take it from you. And so we work together to stay one step ahead. And that's where the FPGAs and the ASICs and GPUs and CPUs come in.
Yeah.
There's the community aspect of it.
Boom! Just blew my mind again.
Hey, you know, hey, I bought on folks who would talk about this because, again, this was a interesting topic. And I am just going to say I have more questions than I had before. I will say that, but I'm clearer than I was when we started, right? Just doing my own research and trying to figure out how to narrate, produce this particular segment. So I'm going to do some homework and do some more investigation. Who knows? We may do an altcoin V2 here to talk a little bit more about this and get a little bit more into some background. But I mean, on that note, I guess I would say, gentlemen, thank you for taking some time out of your evening to talk about what I can definitely tell both of you are quite passionate about, right? I mean, you see that there is potential. Good in doing what you're investing your time, resource, money, all of that into, right? So, I mean, that has to be commended, that has to be recognized, that has to be respected. That being said, if anyone wants to get in contact with you individuals, Andrew, you probably will be hush hush on that. So I may just take you off camera right now. But Eric, we see you've got you're showing your Twitter ID, your handle right there. How can folks at least get in contact with you in case they have some questions about this?
Eric at ericburks.com. As one way, that's probably the only way. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me. But again, I don't have that background that Andrew has. I'm merely the front end, and I don't give financial advice. But
no worries.
But like you said, you know, you gotta do research. You have to see for yourself. Again, I mean, hopefully there'll be a point to where this becomes something that we can see, you know, potentially see as a way to, I don't know, change our economic pattern, I guess, if you will. Yeah, but
that's a good point.
Yeah, who knows? You know, right now it's still up in the air.
I love it. I wish you guys well. Who knows? You may give me. I installed the app. I haven't set up an account yet. I'll figure something out. I'll go to you. More knowledgeable individuals before I put any nickels into the system, because before I get in trouble at home, you know, I can't. I got college to pay for right now, so Daddy can't buy too many more toys. But, on that note, gentlemen, again, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I
appreciate you. Thank you, everyone who logged in. James Hicks here from Infotainment News. You can follow me at James Hicks on all social, and we will see you for next episode. You guys be well.
All right. So.